Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high atop the Chicago River on this April day. April 4th was to be the White Sox home opener. They'll do that tomorrow because of the lousy weather today. So we're here with the Biz Lunch. A little bit later in the program, we will talk to Andrea Haines from the Chicago Tribune. One of the stories I want to ask her about is a story I saw where younger people, and by that I mean millennials and younger, are feeding their pets more and more fresh food rather than the bagged dog food. I'm sorry I laughed, but I just think that while they can't afford their student loans, apparently they're buying ground chuck for their dog. But that's a real movement, and the pet industry is responding to it. On Thursdays, though, we usually start, if we can, with Ian Schur, who is a senior editor at CNET.com, and he's on a phone line with us now. Ian, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, do you feed your dog? Do you have a pet?
I have a cat. She's very rambunctious. She's actually, if you do a Google search, you'll find that she interrupted me on television once.
Nice.
On a live cable hit. But she does eat better than I do, I have to admit it. She has, we buy this kind of grain-free food that's very, very healthy, and there are some days where the quality of her food is probably better than mine.
Enough of that. You're in California. Let's stay there. Tell me about, now I understand Steven Spielberg sort of taking on Netflix and making sure that maybe they're not eligible for some of the Academy Awards. But now the Justice Department is warning the Academy that if they zero in on movies that are on TV at the same time they're at the theaters, that they might be sued by the government?
Yeah, this is stemming from Steven Spielberg making a number of comments about how he feels like Netflix isn't a place where real quote-unquote movies happen. And, you know, his feeling is that, you know, that a movie, to be able to be eligible for the Oscars at least, should be in a theater and it should have all this pomp and circumstance. And Netflix argues, of course, that, you know, they're bringing the movie theater experience to you on any screen you want. And it's making it so that you don't have to pay $18 every time you want to see a movie.
So this is about...
What's interesting
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is about Roma, right? Roma did very well award season. It was released simultaneously on Netflix as in the movie theaters, and that's the sort of thing. But so, in thinking of this, I'm not sure Spielberg has a case unless, you know, you make video projects differently for TV than you do for the big screen. And if some of these projects are being made essentially for TVs but being shown on the big screen, then I think he's right. Maybe it won't be a best picture eligible, or maybe it's not a fair contender when it comes to other projects that were made for big screen audiences.
I mean, the problem is that, you know, the struggle here, I think, personally, is how do you define television versus movie these days? I would argue there are some television shows that are better than a lot of movies I've seen. And the only difference between them is that one is shown on a projector and I have to pay more, and maybe it's longer, and the other one is shown on my television. But I can watch plenty of movies on my iPad, right? They come out after a certain amount of time on any device you want.
But it's just
that the artificial decision, we're going to have it in the theater for 6 months, and then you can watch it at home. That's a business decision. It's not a technology decision.
You know,
right?
we'd have to talk to a filmmaker about it, because I don't completely agree with you. I think that if something is made for television, it is shot differently. It's written differently. It's written for or directed for a smaller screen, whereas a film, you know, they talk about how you should see this in the widescreen format or whatever. Films are shot for a bigger screen. So and I don't know that one's better than the other. I doubt that one is better than the other. They're just different. So, but maybe they are apples and oranges when it comes to awards time.
Well, at least according to the DOJ, not yet, right?
No, and
the thing that DOJ wants to point out is that if you were to artificially, from their point of view, restrict Netflix from being eligible or any streaming service, that could actually impact their ability to grow as a business. because we very well know that an Oscar winner makes more money, right? A lot of people go and watch and see it again. They buy the DVD. It's the same thing as the Pulitzers, right? A fiction winner in Pulitzer suddenly shoots to the top of the charts and stays there for a while. So it's important to consider, from the DOJ's point of view at least, they don't want this to be basically trying to cut out competition, which is maybe not what Spielberg intended, but what it's coming across.
It's funny. I feel like you've got the government telling a private club how to run their annual golf outing in a way, because I think that they should be. I mean, they set standards. It's okay for them. I don't know. We'll see. We spend enough time
on it. It's going to be interesting.
I'm not exactly sure how I feel about it, but I do think there's this distinction about something shot for TV versus film, and maybe the government should stay out of that. Okay. I hate when I'm online and I keep getting these pop-ups, this website that I've gone to once in my life, but it wants to ask to send notifications to me for the rest of my life. And there are now some extensions that will allow me to get rid of that. I think is it on Google or Firefox?
Well, what's going on is that both of them are working on ways to stop this. So certainly when you go to a lot of websites, and including a lot of news sites, what tends to happen is that they ask if they can send you alerts on your computer, which, you know, immediately some people say, yes, I love it. Some people say no. And what Mozilla did is they did a test with their software. They sent out this code to check how often people click yes. And it turns out that 97% of the time, right, people say no.
And so I wouldn't mind them asking if they had an option for never ask again.
Right. Well, and I think what Mozilla and Google want to do is that they either want to offer something like that, which, by the way, Apple has done something similar with the App Store. An app can only ask you a certain number of times to review it, and then it has to stop. And that was part of the reason, is people were spammed all the time with requests.
Right.
So what Mozilla and Google are saying is, say, look, why don't you create a button on your website that says, send me alerts, right? And that way, I make the decision as a user. I'm not being harassed to do it instead. So what's interesting here is that Google and Mozilla have a lot of power. If they turn off this ability for any website to send you alerts, they're screwed. So these companies are going to have to respond and see, okay, work with Google and Mozilla and say, okay, what does work? What does feel like it's good for users? And I think this is going to be a positive thing in the end.
That's Ian Schur, an editor from CNET.com. I want to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about why a robo-dog has been banned from the state of Illinois. Okay, so we've talked about, I think, Illinois', it's called the Biometric Information Privacy Act, or BIPA, I'll say, and it's done to sort of protect you from face recognition software and all of that, and which is seen as a positive thing, but as technology continues to grow, maybe it's less of a positive thing. So there's this piece in CNET, and the hook of it was this Sony RoboDog, which has been banned in the state of Illinois. Explain that for me.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So first off, what the RoboDog is. So Sony makes these robotic dogs for about $3,000. They're packed with a ton of smarts that make it feel as close to what a real dog would be. It even makes peeing noise. And it has a camera on its front that identifies your face. And this is something very important for places like in Japan, where there are many more elderly people than young people, and they need people for companionship, right? And they've come up with this robot as part of an answer. It's pretty popular there. So one of the things is that it uses that camera to identify who you are. And in Illinois, there was a law passed in 2008 that said you need informed written consent for any biometric data collection. And of course, you can't, you know, when you're Sony, you can't go out and ask for informed written consent from every person the dog might look at. So they don't sell it there.
Oh, wow. So you could do it. You could do it for the owner, but you're right. It's the owner's just one of many people the dog is going to lick during its lifetime.
Exactly, right? Whereas in Texas, for example, which also has a less controlling law, they say that the person has to be informed somehow. So this is something, as a journalist, I know very well. You know, you're considered to be informed that I am recording you when I throw a recording device in your face. I don't have to particularly ask for your permission. So it's stuff like that where it's really fascinating how these biometric laws that were invented 11 years ago before the technology really grew. Now we have all these Nest cameras are able to identify your face and all that.
We could live without a robo dog here. I mean, I think that could be forced savings. We're not spending $3,000 on something silly. But a lot of us are spending a lot less money on Nest home security systems and other home security systems. And they also use facial recognition software, but they're not allowed to in Illinois.
And that's the thing, right? A number of these things, and there, it's not just Nest. There are a number of them. There's Honeywell has a smart home security system. There are others. WiseNet is a popular smart cam coming up that we've reviewed on CNET. And a lot of these things are using your face to either identify how you like the room, so they know that you like it to be warmer when you're home, or they identify that you're the person home and they don't have to send an alert to the rest of the family that someone, some stranger is in your home. So all these things are getting more and more popular. And it's going to be interesting to see whether or not Illinois and other states, how they adopt new laws and look at this stuff, because it is going to come to a head at some point as we add more tech to our lives.
And it's interesting. Okay, I want to ask you also, because I like this story about Google coming out and saying that for all their contractors now, they're going to have to, I think that certain minimum benefits, right? They've set a floor for what they have to pay their workers and things like that. So if you want to have a contract with Google, you've got to treat your workers in a certain way. That could be seen as a real sign of enlightenment on the part of Google, but it comes after their own workers sort of force their hand.
Right. I mean, this is the thing. Google's own workers, and this is a trend we're seeing in Silicon Valley, the employees are starting to push the companies to change. We saw Google employees, for example, protest very loudly over one executive who was given a big golden parachute as he was kicked out for sexual harassment issues. And they were also protests over Google's working with the military to give them artificial intelligence. So in this case, employees were protesting against the way that their contractors are treated. You know, contractors at Google, they don't get the free food and the access to the gym and all the other, you know, really kind of over-the-top benefits that Google tends to give their employees. And so they protested, and now the contractors are going to get $15 minimum wage, which is a popular thing in this country, and they're going to get stuff like paid parental leave and vacation time, which is something that contractors really don't get anywhere.
We're running out of time here, but over half of Google's workers are contractors. So, Mike, when I read this, I'm thinking, well, these are Google workers in a way protecting themselves as well, because if so much of the Google workforce can be paid dirt and treated like dirt, that keeps their wages and their benefits perhaps lower as well. Is there anything to that, or was this altogether altruistic?
I think there's definitely a personal sense of, I may go to another company and I want them to treat me well as well. And that's something you see a lot in the employees throughout these companies, is that they're starting to collectively think of, well, if I move to the next company, how am I going to be treated? And there is a war going on between Facebook, Apple, Google, and a few others over who can top each other in terms of the benefits they offer to employees, because this is becoming an issue.
Yeah,
so it'll be interesting to see how it pushes.
It's Ian Schur, a senior editor at CNET.com. Ian, thanks for joining us today. Let's talk next week.
Absolutely. Take care.
It's the WinTrust. Thanks very much, David Jennings. Steve Bertrand here. It is the WinTrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by WinTrust, Chicago's bank, and we thank them for that. In the studio now is Andrea Haynes, because if it's Friday, wait a minute.
I'm confused.
It's not Friday. Andrea comes by from the Tribune most Fridays, but tomorrow we're going to be out at Cork and Kerry for opening day, so thanks for coming by today.
Sure.
I'm so excited about this pet food story for all the wrong reasons. You know, we had a dog for 14 years who left us in October, and I was always kind of amazed at the amount of money people think I'm an anti-pet person, but, you know, I'm not someone who looked to spend up on my pet and on Roxy. But there was a story that you guys had earlier where millennials or younger people are buying more and more fresh food when it comes to their dog food. They're not buying the bags, the 50-pound bags of food that last for years and years.
They are. So I know we're kind of generation kibble. I have dogs not much younger than yours was. And, you know, we were kibble kibble dog households, but many people are buying fresh food, and they're like, even places like Walmart are carrying it now.
It's amazing to me. Sales of fresh pet food and grocery and pet stores jumped 70% to more than $546 million between 2015 and 2018.
Yeah, $500 million. And that doesn't even count people that are buying online or making food at home, which some people do.
Now, aren't these the same people who I'm feeling sorry for because they can't afford their student loans?
It could be. But people think of pets as a member of the family now. So I think food and nutrition, you know, they just have this idea that this is better, which is maybe even a little bit questionable. It's not entirely clear how much better it is for the animal.
You know, Ian Scherer, who is a senior editor from CNET, was on earlier, and we kind of were kicking this around. He said, yeah, we give our pets fresh food with no grains and all of that. Well, the story points out that some of these diets with no grains actually can lead to heart problems for the dogs.
There's been this thing with pea protein and other things like that that's raising some questions. So like anything, it's maybe a little bit untested. And there are still, don't let me go too far down the path of defending commercial food,
right.
But there are certain nutrients that dogs and particularly cats need that they might not get from a natural food diet. You know, it's not, we always think, what would they do in the wild? And that's usually not a very good comparison. You know, dogs are domesticated for one thing. They're not wild anymore. And like what you're getting from a raw food may not be exactly what they would be getting in the caveman days anyway.
Okay, so there's that. But here's why I really like the story. It never occurred to me how pet food trends follow human food trends.
Yes, because who's buying the food, right? The human. So it needs to sound good to the purchaser. So you see ingredients and trends, like we were talking about Fancy Feast.
The cat food in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
And that's when all of our moms had gourmet cookbooks. And so the idea was that would translate to pet food. So they would be attracted to gourmet cat food, Fancy
Exactly.
Feast.
Exactly.
The one I really liked because I didn't know gravy had its heyday in the 50s.
Apparently gravy had its heyday. And so Gravy Train was a thing back in the day. And I feel like that also has sort of a rugged maybe nature to it,
right,
that maybe was appealing to.
So I just knew Gravy Train. I had no idea that the marketing was because I was getting gravy during my Sunday dinners, too.
Everything's more delicious with gravy, I guess is the theory there.
Yeah, and sometimes that's true. Not altogether always, but sometimes. Okay, let's go to the Goodwill store because we donate things to Goodwill all the time. It's ours is on Dundee and another street. I can't remember the other street, but you know, I was just there last weekend. My kids love to shop at Goodwill or secondhand. A lot of their clothing is secondhand clothing. And now Goodwill, which relies on their shops, their brick and mortars, are also moving online, at least in New York and New Jersey. Explain this for me.
Yeah, so they're trying this out on the East Coast. They've teamed up with Price.com to develop a browser add-on. So if you're using this, you could be trying to find something that you need to buy, you know, a campfire lantern, whatever it may be, some object. And it will then tell you if you can find that item on the Goodwill website, and you could order it there instead of ordering it from other possible online retailers.
And so is this... So if you're shopping on Amazon, you're going to get a pop-up ad from Goodwill saying, hey, don't do it. Well, we can get this for you cheaper.
Exactly. Rather than buying the item new, you would get an option to buy it secondhand.
It seems like a lot of logistics when it comes to keeping track of inventory and what's, because this isn't necessarily what's in the physical Goodwill stores, right?
Yeah, they're trying to draw a line there. I think they're not abandoning their physical stores by any means. Part of what they think they're trying to appeal to also is just this idea of the environmental consciousness of it. Like, they're getting a lot of excess stuff as everyone Marie Kondos their home and dumps all the stuff on Goodwill. Meanwhile, people are buying especially things that might be one-time or two-time use items. So it's a way to kind of connect those two and, you know, be a little bit hip about the fact that the reuse angle is appealing to some young people.
And used clothing, secondhand clothing, maybe that's a better way to say it, is huge when it comes to younger people,
it
right?
It is. I think, again, some are just like resistant to this fast fashion. You buy something, you wear it for a few months, it wears out, you throw it out. People are more and more conscious about that because a lot of that stuff Goodwill doesn't even want, right? Or Salvation Army. It's like a lot of it is just junk after a few months, and people are getting a little more aware of trying to reuse things.
My kids, when my kids are home together, one of the things they do for recreation is to go shop the resale shops. When we were in L.A. visiting Emma and Noah was with us, that's what we did. We went to resale shops.
Yeah, I think there's a treasure hunting aspect of it that's probably kind of fun too, right? You're not sure what you'll find.
Yeah, and I bought a couple of shirts that I didn't try on, a big mistake because the sizes aren't universal. But that's enough about me. Okay, one more. Google teaming up with Walmart. So this is all about Amazon and Whole Foods, right? Amazon and Whole Foods owned by the same, they're the same company, delivering groceries online. And so now Walmart is teaming up with Amazon to try to do the same thing.
Yep, it's an arms race, right? To just keep our interest when we're shopping. It's just such a huge, huge arena right now. So Walmart is now doing kind of a voice activated shopping, and it's designed to help you restock. So it will learn things that you like you can say, add milk, and it will know which milk that you normally buy, and it will just add that into your virtual shopping bag.
So you'll say, hey, Google, add milk, and it keep. I didn't realize I have an Amazon device at home, and I'd use it only to listen to music. Do you use yours for more than that?
I don't have one, Steve, and I'm a little disappointed that you do, with as often as we've talked about
the privacy,
security and privacy issues, you know, around that.
I leave my curtains open, too. I don't care. But a lot of people use these devices to create their shopping list, which kind of makes a little sense. You just walk by, say, hey, I need extra virgin olive oil again.
Yep, the minute you notice you're out of something, you can just add that in there.
And so the idea is with these, if you bought a particular brand of extra virgin olive oil, it would remember that, so all you have to say is olive oil.
Yes, you don't have to say it every time.
And does it deliver it to you, or it just creates the list and you go pick it up somewhere?
Yeah, they do the curbside pickup. So I think it's a 13% of people that use this are now, or that, you know, that buy groceries there are now taking advantage of the curbside pickup, so they don't have to go into the store. And food sales are actually a huge part of Walmart's revenue. It's more than half of their revenues on groceries now.
That's another thing I didn't realize till I read this article. Half of what Walmart sells are groceries.
Yeah, I was surprised that it was as much as half. That's, you know, you think of it as they have everything, right? Like, I mean, they're such massive stores. They carry everything from lawnmowers to beds to
beanbag chairs.
You know, yeah, to chips and pop. And I guess that's what everybody's buying.
All right, Andrea Haines, read more at this at Chicago Business, ChicagoTribune.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, it's a free
day. Have a great Friday.
It's a free day for you tomorrow.
Yay.
It's the Wind. Listen to us out at the Sox game.
I sure will.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. It's been a minute since we've checked in on the suburban real estate shift of the various HQs in the Chicago area. And it looks like the old AT&T campus in Hoffman Estates isn't doing so well. The entire complex was originally sold for $338 million back in 2005, and now a New Jersey development company just closed on three of the buildings for $21 million. Investors estimate it to be a $100 million cut to the value. Oof, that's tough. But it's not tough times if you're in the championship round of the Chicago Inno's Tech Madness Bracket. Two finalists are Second Kitchen and Chowley. So you can cast your vote at AmericanInno.com/Chicago. But the big takeaway to this is the fact that two food companies are duking it out to be champions of tech madness. So the consumer food and tech space in Chicago is going strong. And this is just another example of what's going on in the space right now.
And let's keep it that way on three. One, two, three.
Let's keep it that way.
I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
12:51, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. On a phone line now is Louis Lazar, who writes for the Chicago Business Journal, and, covers a variety of things, but most of them are Kentucky basketball. And so what's going on this weekend?
You had to bring it up, didn't you? Well, Kentucky is not going on, that's for sure.
I almost sent
Good afternoon.
Listen, Louis, I was poised last weekend to send you a text of congratulations. I really was. I was excited because I thought Kentucky was going to go on. It didn't happen.
Well, I had my doubts, quite honestly. They just haven't been doing three-pointers, and there was a lot of issues in the end. So the best team will win, I have no doubt.
You did better than Marquette, man. They laid an egg in the first round.
Right.
Hey, so there was a report out today, Ethiopian investigators clearing the pilots of that Ethiopian Airlines plane crash, which puts even further pressure on Boeing. Steve Alexander was saying earlier today that Boeing stock is actually up by a couple of percentage points today, but this is a crisis moment for the Chicago company, isn't it?
I would say so, and there's still a hell of a lot of questions out there that need to be answered, which makes me think this grounding of the MAX 8s is going to last a lot longer than a lot of people hope it will.
Well, tell me about that, because we thought they were going to have their software fixed this week, right? And now it's been pushed back?
Right. Well, apparently they didn't like what they saw when they looked into it, the various authorities, including the FAA. So they got to go back to the drawing board. And I don't know. You just can't make any predictions on this thing. There's too many issues that have to be resolved.
I mean, there are a lot of different issues. One now involves FAA inspectors. Can you sort that out for me?
Well, I mean, actually what hasn't been brought up a lot that involves these inspectors, I mean, there's been an ongoing audit involving the FAA inspectors in Southwest Airlines. There were allegations after this engine blowout Southwest had last year. They started an audit because there was allegedly a cozy relationship between FAA inspectors and Southwest Airlines. So there's a lot of issues surrounding these FAA inspectors that are being looked into, and I don't know when we'll get the final answers.
And so when we do get the final answers, though, and I know you're not an expert on worldwide aviation, but you cover Boeing, you cover aviation here. So I would imagine the FAA would clear them for flight, these MAX jets, but then it's a matter of the rest of the world, right?
Well, I mean, the question is, and among the many questions out there, will the FAA allow the planes to get back in the air before these other inspections going on in other countries are completed? Some people don't think the FAA will give the green light if there's still outstanding issues these other countries are investigating. So we just don't know exactly how this is going to play out.
Meantime, these jets keep backing up on the assembly line in Seattle.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people give Boeing a lot of slack here, and I've long suspected, you know, that they maybe have become a little too arrogant a monopoly here in the United States, and I think this is a major wake-up call. We're just going to see where they wind up when this thing is over.
One of the airlines most affected is Southwest, right? Southwest flying out of Midway here, and they announced this week, earlier, I think it was on Monday, that they are unilaterally extending their ban, through next month?
Well, through the end of May, yeah. So it is a lot of downtime, 2.5 months of downtime, and that may not be the end of it.
And they were on Capitol Hill, right? It's already cost them $100 million.
Right. And no, it's going to be a huge hit to their bottom line, no question about it. And again, we won't know until first we know how long the grounding is going to last. I mean, there's some people who think that MAX 8 may never take to the skies again, depending on what. There's still that issue possibility.
I mean, could Boeing survive that?
Well, if anybody's got deep pockets, Boeing's got deep pockets. Again, I don't cover them as minutely as some people do, but their suggestion is whatever the outcome is, Boeing will survive.
And who else is there? I mean, besides Airbus and Boeing?
Well, Airbus is a big entity. They've had nothing to compare with this kind of a problem, but so that would certainly remain as another option. But right, it's really Boeing and Airbus. Those are the two biggies by far.
And Southwest is taking a hit here, just as they're doing very well with users of TripAdvisor. They won a lot of awards from TripAdvisor recently.
Right. I mean, people like to fly them. They have very flexible cancellation rules. Of course, the no baggage fees. And though I've flown them enough, I mean, sometimes you have issues with the onboard service, but generally the public likes what they get from Southwest because they're fairly consistent about it.
All right, if you're stuck in Chicago and you can't catch a flight out at Midway on Southwest, at least you could go see the Chicago Symphony Orchestra perform.
We hope.
Maybe not.
So I don't know. They're going back to the bargaining table tomorrow. I just got word of that late yesterday, so there's a slim sliver of hope that something may come from that. But somebody's going to have to blink here. It's either one pension plan or the other, and so far I don't see any road to compromise. So at some point somebody's going to have to give here, but then the trustees hold the purse strings, so they may have the final say.
Well, it's interesting to me that what they're fighting for, I mean, in a way they're fighting a 1970s fight or 1985, but good for them. The musicians want a fixed pension, the old-fashioned pension.
Right, defined benefits.
Which I think the absence of that in this country is going to be catastrophic in two or three decades because we haven't saved for our own retirement. But anyway, that's another story. So that's what they're fighting for.
Well, they want it because they believe that's their best option for attracting the highest talent and the most talented musicians. I mean, some might argue that point, but that's their belief, the members of the orchestra that are there now.
So they went on strike earlier this month. They had kind of had a mutually agreed cooling off period, right? And then they returned to the bargaining table tomorrow.
Late tomorrow, so we'll just have to see. We may get some early indication they've found a way to come to some agreement, or it may just be another chance to get together and say we don't agree. It's hard to say right now what that will be.
So no prediction from you about what may be coming?
No, I'm not. I covered enough unions, you never predict.
All right. Well, Kentucky's not in it. Marquette's not in it.
Who are you predicting will win? Michigan State.
I don't think so. I've got enough anger in my life. I don't need Tom Izzo too.
Oh, all right.
Who do you predict? Well,
I'm not predicting either. I think they've all been streaky this year. So I'm making no prediction.
Louis Lazar, it is always great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Great.